Hello, I'm Arnold Hamilton, editor of the Oklahoma Observer.
And I'm Marianne Martin, and this is ObserverCast, your weekly deep dive into Oklahoma politics and policy,
presented by the Mary Lou Lemon Foundation.
The long nights of the fall and winter make the days around the holiday season hard enough on many people's mental health. But Oklahoma may be finding a way to make it worse for the people of our state. After Governor Kevin Stitt took control of it in years of turmoil at the Oklahoma Department of Mental Health and Substance Abuse Services, budget shortfalls that eerily mirror budget crises at the Department of Health nearly a decade ago, and the dramatic legislative ouster of its director last year, the current director, who, you might have guessed, has no direct professional background in mental health care or health care administration, recently announced a drastic new direction to manage the agency budget, closing clinics. This comes at a time when, according to the Healthy Minds Policy Initiative, nearly one in four Oklahomans experience mental illness and over 500,000 have a substance use disorder. Oklahoma's mental health care system has been unique in that it directly contracts with providers to provide services through community behavioral health clinics, and we've seen what happened with the state's Medicaid program that also directly contracted with providers. The Medicaid program was outsourced through managed care to third-party vendors. Is the same thing going to happen with our already precarious mental health care network? What does this mean for the clinics, the providers, and the communities in which these clinics are located? And what are the implications for Oklahomans in need of care? We talked with our friend, Norman State Representative Jared Deck, who is one of our legislators sounding the alarm on the issue. Good evening. It's great to be here tonight with you, to our good friend. And just to make sure everyone knows, he does provide the sound, the music, that the soundtrack of ObserverCast, and always has. But we are really happy to have you here with us tonight, talking about an issue that impacts so many Oklahomans, is going to have really negative impacts on our continued state. We already have terrible mental health outcomes as a state, so this is a really timely, relevant issue. So we always start off with, tell us who you are and what you do, and then, like we were discussing, after that we'll kind of go through some of our like disclaimers and open, you know, transparency statements, so everyone kind of knows what your relationship is. And we should probably talk about my former relationship to this whole issue. So who are you, what do you do?
Well, my name is State Representative Jared Deck. I represent House District 44, which is Core Norman. So I represent Campus Corner. We are a good time, and you are welcome to join us anytime.
I call it God's country on the podcast, actually.
There we go. There we go. I originally from Western Oklahoma. I grew up on a family farm, and we owned the town grocery store in my hometown, and spent a good chunk of my life there. And I have been, involved in retail businesses for most of my adult life. But I really kind of got started as an outsourced factory worker. And that's what got me involved in politics nearly 20 years ago. And so my background is in business, but also in organizing. You know, I learned a lot about these systemic problems. Whenever they apply to you, they're no longer systemic. They're deeply personal. And then I eventually ended up in Norman. My music career took off at a certain point, and so I am a touring singer-songwriter and now a state representative.
Well, again, so glad to see you tonight. We don't get to run into each other as much as we used to. But for transparency's sake, like we were talking about, we're going to talk about, I don't want to use acronyms until we've talked about them yet. Because for those who don't know, in like state in health policy, in federal agencies, in agency, state government, all that, there's a lot of acronyms. So we don't want to lose anyone in that part of the conversation. But and actually, I'm going to take a second to give us some background. So if everyone remembers in 2019, the state legislature gave, we've talked about this many times, the state legislature gave the governor, added to the executive branch, five state agencies that had been independent beforehand. And at the time, shortly after, noted that these were five state agencies that were large, very, very large budgets, but had never been privatized. They were managed by the state. And so that was DOC, that was Department of Transport, so Department of Corrections, Department of Transportation, the Oklahoma Healthcare Authority, so the state Medicaid agency, and the Oklahoma Department of Mental Health and Substance Abuse Services, so we called DMH. And now those are all under the control of the government, and we've seen there's a fifth one and I'm blanking on it, but we've seen some, well, with OHCA we've seen a ton. Managed care is a big deal. It's been, so Medicaid has effectively been privatized. That's a whole other episode. That's like three or four episodes actually. But today we're talking about what's happening at DMH. So Jared, kind of tell us what your relationship is to that. Talk us through some of those acronyms so people know what we're talking about. And then we'll kind of dive into it a little bit more.
Sure thing. So my district actually encompasses what we call the Griffin campus. The Griffin campus houses the original, what was the original Central State Hospital, which was the original state mental health hospital, and also a couple of other mental health resources provided by the state, particularly Central Oklahoma Community Mental Health Center, which the Community Mental Health Center model was actually, I think, signed into law by President John F. Kennedy a long time ago. And the one in on the Norman campus was actually the first community mental health center in the nation. If you are at all familiar with the Federal Qualified Health Center model, the FQHC model, the
Also known as community health centers.
right? The Community Mental Health Center is sort of a similar model. It's just for built for mental health. And Norman had the first one in the country. It also has houses the Children's Recovery Center, which is a similar type of situation, but set up primarily for pediatrics. And for me personally, I've also for just the past couple of years served on the board for NorthCare, which is a certified community behavioral health center, which is it's a similar model, but it's effectively a nonprofit. It's a private nonprofit with a partnership with the federal government, governed by SAMHSA, which is a
Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration, yeah.
Yes, that's it. Thank you. And receives federal grant dollars to administer mostly to Medicaid clientele and the uninsured. And so that's a little bit about, kind of how I ended up here. Whenever I was campaigning originally, of course, mental health was an issue that I cared deeply about. But about 3 weeks after I got elected, the news was leaked to the media that Griffin Memorial Hospital in Norman, which has been here since 1915, was effectively going to be moved to Oklahoma City. And there have been a lot of ins and outs to that process. The administration at that time, that was late 2022,
So
was not.
the Stitt administration, Kevin Stitt administration.
Yes, Kevin Stitt administration, but I will also say it was the Carrie Slatten Hodges administration at the Department of Mental Health.
Who was so, sorry to keep jumping in, but she was the leader of DMH.
That's correct. And
After Terry White was displaced when DMH was taken over by Kevin Stitt in 2019.
that's correct. And I felt like her, she and her staff were not forthcoming, not honest, not only with the staff around the Griffin campus, but even with legislators like myself. And watching their administration of DMH fall apart at the seams, and she was able to retire really in the nick of time. One of her top aides eventually was charged with some with with a form of embezzlement. And then we eventually ended up with Ali Friesen as the director of the Department of Mental Health. And then, of course, we had a massive mid-year budget shortfall because supposedly or allegedly of, adding up to upwards of $650,000 per month in administrative salary to the DMH budget. And
Whoa, wait,
yeah.
wait. So you're telling us, for those who don't follow this as closely as you do, that a Republican administration actually grew government in an extraordinary amount like that?
Hey, we're not going
Really?
to talk about how he grew the
Surely
government, but the
not.
governor's office budget alone. Okay, so
Whoa.
we
Okay, I'm sorry. I'm sorry to interrupt because
won't
this was a serious conversation until I butted in, but.
go there. Well, the unseriousness seems to be the point. And that seems to be the theme here. I've said this for years. We obviously saw it with the Ryan Walters administration at the State Department of Education, but we're also seeing it here with the Department of Mental Health and really with this gubernatorial administration in general. We keep electing people and putting people in charge of things when that in charge of organizations that they themselves don't believe in the product, right? Ryan Walters did not believe public education should exist, yet we put him in charge of it. The Department of Mental Health, I mean, don't mean to say this of the former commissioners, but this gubernatorial administration seems to believe that we shouldn't be servicing as a state our patients across the state. And so they just don't want it to be here. The director of the Department of Mental Health, the interim director, I met with him in July. Had a very, very robust conversation. It was blunt, which was I appreciated. He did mention that there is some possibility for privatization. But he also specified that that the governor had charged him with eliminating 300 FTEs, full-time equivalents, employees. And at that time, he said, "I feel like I'm able to reduce almost most of that, or almost all of that, within administrative salaries." And that sounded good at the time. And he talked really vehemently about the need to support our frontline staff and make sure they have the resources to do the job because they're the ones doing the work day in, day out. And I appreciated that conversation. Yet here we are. And what's interesting is this privatization, if you will, what it does is it eliminates probably 400 state employees from from our payroll. So it goes above and beyond what the governor originally charged. And, despite what anyone might think about about the status of our mental health care system, basically eliminating care, right? Eliminating jobs and eliminating care for the sake of just being able to say, "Oh, I shrunk government."
Now,
Well,
does that get replaced then through contractors, private contractors?
that is the idea. So this past Friday, an RFP was released by the Department of Mental Health, asking for proposals to effectively rent the facilities and take over services as contractors. Originally, I was told that that would go to in that it was for in-state CCBHCs or Certified Community Behavioral Health Centers. Would be the ones applied for to apply for it. However, what we have found is that that requirement is not actually in there, and so out of state providers can also apply. And I have a myriad of concerns regarding this, but for the sake of me not talking for another 20 minutes straight, I'll let you all ask another question.
So let's talk about the center, the clinics by themselves, right? So, 'cause I kind of want to break this down for a little bit because I mean, hopefully a lot of people haven't had to directly experience this, but so you have Griffin Memorial Hospital, and it's announced that it's being closed and moved up to this facility, yet to be built in Oklahoma City. And so these are inpatient beds.
That's correct.
So inpatient mental health care. But then you also have the community-based health care, which means you go home after treatment.
That's right. And that is the that those are the beds or the chairs, if you will, that they're looking to create to contract out. Effectively, what we're looking at is turning the Department of Mental Health effectively into what the healthcare authority has become, right, where they are not managing the care or the people, they are managing the contracts.
Right.
And that seems to be the goal of the administration, is to get out of the business of caring for folks and get into the business of contracts. You know, one of my primary concerns about this particular RFP is it has a 30-day expiration date. In other words, the applicants' proposals must be turned in by January 17th, I believe.
Okay, so can we talk about that for just a second? Because
yes,
that alone is a huge problem.
Well, it's a red flag to me, because in my mind, with a 30-day notice, that to me, that it tells me that they've already been talking with someone.
Right. And I mean, who can turn over an application like that?
Right.
Unless they've been waiting in the wings, or they do this regularly, say in other states.
Well, and just like with managed care on Medicaid, where originally provider-led entities were supposed to be able to apply, and then in the end, they weren't allowed to. In part, they did that in part through the timing of that proposal, and so we only ended up with out-of-state managed care entities or managed care organizations being able to apply. And so we are now sending our Medicaid dollars out of state and then hoping they send as much of it back into the care system minus their cut. And what I am concerned with here is that an out-of-state conglomerate could sweep in and take all 13 facilities, right? And take them all over, and then they could decide, well, we don't think that the one in Tallahena is really servicing the population as well as the one in Woodward, or vice versa. And you know, there's not a requirement that they maintain these locations past a year.
Yeah, I was just going to say, pardon me for being a cynic about this. Kevin Stitt is not smart enough to know anything about this and about how, you know, best practices, how it should be run. Who's behind this? And are we seeing this in other states? Is this, are we rolling out another one of those ALEC type things here where, you know, it's part of some a corporate takeover it's whoever gets in Stitt's ear and pushes them that direction.
Like what happened with managed care and OHCA.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would say that there's obviously with this administration, there's a possibility for that, right? Like the proof is in the pudding. They've shown us the proof before. We should believe them, right? So,
yeah.
You know, yeah. we should, when they tell us who they are, we should believe them
the first time. Mm-hmm.
That's right. And yeah, I'd say that, you know, it's very possible that someone's already in the ear, that someone has already reached out to the department to the governor's office. There's no telling, really. And said, hey, we'd be interested in taking this over.
So are we seeing this in other states? Do you have any idea about that? I mean, it's a little bit like, you know, all of a sudden we have this groundswell of interest in eliminating property taxes in Oklahoma. Well, that's not unique to Oklahoma. That's happening in several states now. I mean, it's rolling across, particularly the South.
Jared, I could be wrong, but I would suspect that actually Oklahoma's model is still fairly unique for it to be the state-run facilities versus already privatized, because that was the case with managed care. Was most states already had managed care. So the state-run facilities are actually pretty unique, is my understanding.
So this is another one of those where Oklahoma is sort of the laboratory for.
Well, I'd say lagging. Like, we have a good thing with the way our OHCA was a good thing,
Right.
And then
Oh,
introduce
no.
something that's happening everywhere else. And that's what, am I wrong, Jared, that like we are unique to still have state-run facilities?
Yeah, I think, yes, I think to a point we are. I believe that Missouri recently did a similar deal where they contracted out to, I think there were two Indiana providers that merged, and then they moved into Missouri, and they've had some struggles there as a result of this. And so yes, we are seeing it to a degree in other states. I can't name all of them, unfortunately, but I do know that Missouri has tried this, and they've definitely struggled. Part of the concerns that the staff has, that our state employees have, is, number one, like just an interruption of services, right?
Which
So
can be absolutely life-threatening in some of these instances,
that's
right?
right. So the RFP requires the entities to be day one ready within 120 days. That's just 4 months. I'm not certain if that's possible because the CCBHC model is going to be, they have particular requirements, and it's not that the community mental health centers don't, but they do operate slight in with a slight difference. And so we could be, they're really concerned about, an interruption of services. They're also concerned about, this whether like this the lease, the minimum of 1 year on a lease, but they are not necessarily required to keep operating as regionally as the Department of Mental Health does currently. And it also, I mean, there are other issues here just on the HR side and on the employment side, where we're already going to be losing some institutional knowledge as the department is offering early retirement benefits, and some folks are already starting to look for other jobs. And I think too, I think that there is no guarantee that the state employee is going to be hired by the new entity. I would like to think that any new entity would want to hire our staff. But there's not a guarantee there. And there is a particular, there's three words written into the RFP. It requires the entity to quote, to offer, quote, available contract positions, end quote. That sounds like a rough spot, like a rough term when you've been a full-time employee with state benefits, trying to navigate the term of available contract positions. That's scary. And for these folks who have worked for our state and served our patients for all these years, it is the uncertainty of the future that not only for themselves, but also for the consumers that they serve.
I mean, I want to think about this too from like a statewide perspective, because we already know that we have a proliferation of healthcare deserts in the state, right? But when you look at it from like a behavioral health access viewpoint, like it's even worse. And so these centers by themselves are dispersed broadly across the state. So it's not like, and I mean, in like you don't have to say it. Oklahoma is vast, right? It's 5 hours to get to Guymon, and yet there's none of these services through these clinics, through these facilities available in the Panhandle, right? Woodward is like the closest for the Panhandle. So to like make that even worse, if they decide, well, it's we if there's no coverage mandates, right? They don't have to have certain coverage and availability across the state. I mean, this for a problem that's already terrible in the state of Oklahoma, this does not cannot make it better.
Yeah, I will say that the CCBHC model, they are required to offer particular services by law. I mean, just like an FQHC would on the primary care side. They are required to offer very specific services. However, if they are not necessarily required to have multiple locations.
That's what I'm
right?
saying, like
Yeah.
from a location standpoint, you know,
Right.
like Woodward to Oklahoma City is 3 hours,
Right.
you
And
know.
honestly, keeping mental health staff, professional staff in Woodward is not easy.
I mean, because what I'm seeing is like it's McAllister, Norman, Lawton, and Woodward.
Yeah, those are the four. But there's but you know, but really it what they've also done, those are the four centers, but they've also opened up the catchment areas, which means that some of the existing CCBHCs may have to reapply for a catchment area that they already have, which that could upend the entire system. And this is about risk mitigation for me, right? Whenever does our mental health care system have issues? Absolutely. And I think if you spoke with any state employee at any of these facilities, they would say, yeah, we have some changes that I would like to see made that I think would be better for patients. We absolutely do. But the problem is, what is the risk versus the reward of changing an entire system at one time, right? And also handing it over to one entity, if that were to be the case, a single entity. Because I mean, we've all seen the dystopian movies where a single company owns an entire, the nation's entire. They have a monopoly over a particular product or a particular
We kind of live in that
hospitals.
right now anyway.
Yeah, we exactly. And we've seen this movie, right? And suddenly we all have to, obey. There's no competition anymore. There is no choice in where you're going to get your care, and who your provider is. And that to me, the risk of disruption of services, the risk of having quality staff, either leaving the state because they feel like we don't have their best interests in mind, and we don't, if they feel like we don't have their best patient's best interests in mind, then for sure. I mean, I'm not going to say that the CCBHC model is problematic. There are some amazing CCBHCs out there doing incredible work, but the problem that we're facing on that model, it goes back to the mess that we heard about the Department of Mental Health back in the 2025 session, about how suddenly the Department of Mental Health said they were $30 million in the hole. Then they were $90 million in the hole. Then they were $60 million in the hole. And then they finally came to the legislature and they said, sorry, we don't actually have any idea how deep we are. And these CCBHCs, also, they are mandated to see uninsured patients, and they do. They
Yeah,
don't turn.
it's very expensive.
That's right. It's very expensive. Well, there is a system for uncompensated mental health care. It's called dependent payments, right? Basically says we're going to see all these uninsured patients, and then at the end of the year, the Department of Mental Health is going to basically hand out pended payments. It's effectively a reimbursement. It's not required for them to do that. And it's also not a set amount of money. So effectively,
So it's not
yeah.
required that the CC the clinic.
Oh, it's not required that the department give
Okay,
the clinic
okay,
this
got it.
re this re this money. And it's hard to call it a reimbursement because there's not a formula for it. It's just, hey, thank you for seeing, 50,000 uninsured patients this year. Here is $9 million, and I'm just using those numbers as examples. But this past year, the Department of Mental Health did not give those pended payments out because they didn't have the money, and that was kind of the beginning of when you started to hear about the mess at the Department of Mental Health. Because all of these CCBHCs that had been seeing these uninsured patients were like, hey, if you're not gonna give us something for seeing them, we can't, that's not a sustainable model for us. But they are required to see those patients. So they're between a rock and a hard place. Now, the difference with the state-run facilities is they see those mental, those uninsured patients, and effectively it's built into their budget. Mm-hmm. You know, the state-run facilities also have a much lower reimbursement rate. Mm-hmm. So, from that perspective, they're less expensive than the CCBHCs. But I think the biggest issue here is, again, that farming this out to the CCBHC model, while it can seem like a good idea, until we also fix this pended payment system and fund it, then we could end up in a lose-lose situation.
So, okay. So typically I would say the rationale for bringing in for turning over state services of any kind to third-party vendors, basically, right, to contractors, is the belief that these vendors are going to be more efficient, more cost-effective, and they're going to do a better job. You know, because the idea is that, like, state government, state services, state-run services are going to just mired in bureaucracy. They don't know what they're doing. They're not good at their jobs. They're not cost effective. They're not efficient. But if we look at, you know, because really OHCA is the biggest, I'd say, example of this is why we did it here, because managed care is the way. It's going to be cheaper, more cost effective, better outcomes. When in fact, what we're seeing then is providers aren't getting reimbursed for their services. Instead of state-based providers and these groups that were actually cut out from the RFP process, that would have been, you know, provider-based, state-based, like MCOs, it goes to these large out-of-state conglomerates. So if we apply that to the behavioral health thing, I mean, you know, it, like, when has this model ever actually worked?
Right. And you have to call into question what they did with the healthcare authority and managed care. Will they attempt to do that same model on behavioral health?
And with in mind that it is cost intensive, that these are individuals that do not, that are not on the private market for health insurance.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. And mental health care, I mean, it is just not, you know, it's not a fair comparison to primary care. You know,
no,
primary
crisis.
Yeah. Primary care is, you know, it's preventative medicine. That is, it saves the entire system money.
And what the, you know, these facilities are doing is, like, many times, even though they're not inpatient, they're like doing like the triple bypass equivalent of mental health.
Right.
Right.
Absolutely.
So, I mean, really, like a triple bypass, like, you know, stroke care. I mean, it's like, it is crisis level chronic, you know, like, or not, excuse me, chronic, but acute. It's like, it is cost intensive, high levels of expertise. And we're asking them to do this with lower reimbursement rates, which is, like, you know, like, that, to me, that is the water freezing in the cracks for the whole system.
And the thing is they are doing it right now.
Right, they're doing it anyways.
Yeah, and, you know, I mean, you know, we've got more things to look at. I mean, for one, you know, the mobile response units that these state organizations have, these state mental health centers have, that are working with 988. And that's 988 is a whole nother thing where I think their current funding runs out.
Yep.
At the end of this fiscal year. So it'll be interesting to see whether or not the Stitt administration wants to continue it. And, you know, because that is, you know, if they ask for more, if they ask to continue it. And this is what's just fascinating to me. I am not a Republican in the House, and yet I have found that, yeah, I have found that, many of my Republican colleagues would like to have given the Department of Mental Health some of our money, extra money that we have saved and put back in order to shore up their resources. And yet this administration has effectively said, No, we're going to do without it.
Well, I mean, okay, so can we just draw a through line here, though? Because we saw what the state administration did with the unhoused in Tulsa and Oklahoma City, right? We see, I mean, they have undermined criminal justice reform left and right, right? I mean, and these are all intimately connected to mental health in our state, especially, right? And so, like what you're saying, Jared, is that they have shown time and again, they have proven time and again that this is just not something that they want to deal with.
Well, exactly.
But unfortunately, they have the levers of power to dismantle it through funding.
That's right. And, you know, these are people who believe that if you ignore a problem, it will go away.
Yeah.
Or if you stop helping, if you stop, you know, servicing a problem, it will just go away. And it's just not the case. I mean, we saw it with Senate Bill 484 this last year, this idea that if we just don't have a homeless shelter, then unhoused people will just find it. They'll go to a different city. And that's not the way life works. And, you know, what I have seen consistently from this administration is an absolute abdication of their personal responsibility to govern. And that is what, you know, that to me is the fundamental flaw in their philosophy of governance, is to not govern. And
yeah.
The
non-governor, yeah.
And that, you know, the non-governing governor. I mean, because what we're seeing, I mean, again, you know, I grew up in a conservative environment in an incredibly small community, and I was taught personal responsibility, and I still believe in consequence for one's actions. But the idea that this is not my job, this is somebody else's job, and what's really truly going to happen is this is going to fall upon the municipalities. And the and they are going to end up subsidizing the services that the state has abdicated. And, you know, we're going to see it like it, right here in Norman, where I'm at, where, you know, as we continue to lose these state services and they're either shut down or they're moved out of town, then our police department is much more active with our unhoused population and the population who is, you know, here seeking treatment. They're going to have many more interactions. And then our city government is spending its resources, you know, basically doing what the state has been doing in this community since 1915, when we opened Central State Hospital. And that to me, you know, in 1915, the state of Oklahoma said, look, mental health, the care for mental health care is something we all have a vested interest in as a population, as a society. And the state is going to take that responsibility upon itself to care for these folks. And that has, but we have seen in the past 30, 40 years is the systematic defunding of that responsibility. You know, we saw it at Griffin Memorial Hospital. You know, the way that the state purposefully allowed those grounds to just fall apart. I have literally called the Department of Mental Health myself and asked them to mow the lawn on multiple occasions, because they will let the grass grow up 2 to 3 feet high. And it's embarrassing, but it's because they didn't want it to succeed. They wanted it to fail.
Well, and it just adds to the stigma of this is failing.
Yeah. Well, of course it's failing.
It looks bad.
You know, I heard from a retired mental health professional who worked at Griffin for a long time. And she drove by the Griffin Hospital recently, and she called a maintenance worker that she was still friends with, and she said, "Hey, I want you to know that the new boards over the windows look really good."
Oh.
Because they had to put new boards up, because the old boards had dilapidated, you know, from covering the windows so many years ago. And that is, you know, that Griffin Memorial Campus, the state of it, I mean, is basically, it's almost the Oklahoma government in a nutshell over the last 15 years.
We're all a nut house. Well, yeah. I mean, 2 points I want to bring up, though, is like the community-based like the community-based healthcare, whether it's mental health or, like healthcare, services for seniors. Like the whole idea was introduced, to restore dignity and to keep people out of institutions, right? And so, I mean, to defund that, but also just, for those who need inpatient care, the fact that, we have to warehouse them in places across the state that they couldn't even get their shit together to get the new facility built. They blew the budget and then had to pull the cord on, constructing the whole new thing. So now it's gone to another provider and oh, it's OU, right? So it's just like, so we're kind of shuffling it around to another like public institution. But I mean, really, when you look at the complete dismissal of the dignity of these, of our friends, family, community members who need this care desperately to survive. I mean, it's this exact same thing, like I said, as a triple bypass heart surgery, right? It's the same thing as cancer care. Their lives depend on it. It is no passing thing. And it's really interesting to me that we're having this conversation after, Director Rob Reiner was killed last weekend. And I just briefly saw the news story about the Costello family,
Yes.
right? Who had a son that was off his treatment, and it had we saw what happened. I mean, so these are not, abstract ideas. This is very tangible. And for the families going through this, especially those who don't have access to private insurance and can't go to these really expensive private care, it's just mind-boggling what we're doing and robbing the dignity of these individuals who deserve this care so they can just survive. And to say we're a pro-life state, and completely ignore this.
Well,
I mean, and I'm sorry, but didn't Sarah Stitt care about mental health?
I'm sure she
I mean,
does.
wasn't that one of her like
Yes.
first lady things, like the first 2 years? I just thought of that. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to explode, but just like, wasn't that a thing for her?
Will add to that, Marianne. I will add that we have, sorry, I lost my thought there for a moment.
I recollect.
I will add to that that we talk a lot about the cost of doing things, right? But the cost of action doesn't always outweigh the cost of inaction. And in this particular case, like not only like the state may believe that they are saving money, but the human cost of cutting care and cutting services and cutting access in different places around the state, that human toll can likely outweigh the finance whatever financial burden we believe that we are saving. And for me, I know these folks on the front lines. I'm their representative. The ones who are literally dealing with someone in a moment of suicidal ideation and who are work a caseworker for someone who is just trying to figure out how to exist and keep a job and get their bills paid and be at their appointments on time. And so I get to hear these stories quite often. And the benefit to society that that these mental health professionals are providing far outweighs the investment that the taxpayers have made into forming a better society.
I mean, we are our brother's keeper, right? I mean, we are our brother's keeper. And I mean, if we want to save people's lives through mental health care, mental health intervention, we literally have to be each other's keeper and keep an eye out for each other.
It's
That's
not
right.
in Kevin Stitt's world, though. We are not, we're not our brother's keeper. It's mind-boggling to me, Jared, that this is an issue that I would dare say every family in Oklahoma, nearly every family in Oklahoma, has been touched by. And to think that this sort of idea could gain the traction that it has gained, and that it's just I don't understand Do folks just not understand? Do they not know enough about it yet? Do they not, if they not, do they not know what to do? Do they not know how the system works? They just know that there are these problems. Is it just easier for people to say, oh, we're just throwing money at people who just can't pull themselves up by their own
My question
bootstraps?
is there a provider out there that's like, yeah, this is the way to go?
That is a good question.
That is a great question.
I'm so proud I have to get a PA through United in order to, make sure this guy has his meds so he can get up and go to work in the morning.
Right.
Is my life is so much better now.
Yeah. No, that's a great question. As far as how much traction it's gained, I mean, I will tell you, in our state, the only traction that I know that this move has made is with the Department of Mental Health and the governor's office. Like that, I can't tell you that. I mean, this is not some, sweeping change that, we all got 700 emails in the legislature hoping from voters hoping that we would make. This is not Medicaid expansion where we attained 313,000 signatures across the state and then passed it on a ballot initiative. This is coming from a very small amount of people who honestly believe that they know better. And that I think is the message here, right? Is that we keep being told by politicians what is best for our health and what is best for our families. And that is some that's really what I want folks to take away from this conversation, if anything, is, I speak to young people all the time and about being representative, working in the political, ecosystem. And I tell them, if you put your faith in politicians, we will most certainly let you down. You have to put your faith in the work, right? You have to put you put your faith in the humanity of the person who's doing the work with you. And when I'm speaking with mental health providers in this particular situation, that's the message that I try to bring home to them. And to the folks out there, to the voters, to the people who are just wondering what is going on, who have the same question that Arnold just had. The people who think this is a great idea are a handful of people in the government, politicians. And there are other people within the mental health world who like the community, the certified community behavioral health center model. And I'm one of those people. I think it's a good model, but at the same time, throwing out the baby with the bathwater, at the expense of our patients, that is a risk that is too high for me to make.
I just have to say, this is my cynical take, and I'm always, I mean, everything's been cynical tonight, so what am I saying? But my most cynical take is, I'm just thinking, sits up there on his, little oak tree, satellite mansion, satellite governor's mansion, talking to buddies up there, and I mean, to me, this just reeks of backroom conversations about, well, my practice could do it better.
And I think too, I mean, we look back at the managed care situation with the out of state MC managed care organizations. There were not no one in Oklahoma was saying, you know what we really need? We
United
really,
health care.
yeah, we really need an insurance adjuster from another state, from New Jersey, telling us, what care works and what care doesn't.
Let's just place the 100 nurses sitting at that building on Lincoln Ave, Avenue Boulevard. Who are calling those patients single-handedly to make sure they're okay. Let's replace them with nurses like in Idaho or wherever it was. Like,
Right.
yeah. Oh. Well.
Well, what we've discovered in with the Stitt administration in particular But it's been building toward this in the right wing takeover of state government in Oklahoma, which has been building for 40 and 50 years now, is that these folks know the cost of everything and the value of nothing. And that's the way they operate.
That's a good way to put it, Arnold.
I don't know. I mean, I think what'll be interesting to see is this governor is a lame duck governor at this point. You know, if like this RFP runs through January, just kind of see how this comes up against, you know, what the legislature decides to do. I really wish Marcus McIntyre was still there. You know, I really wish he was still there. But it's going to be an interesting session, which is always the case. But this is a big deal. So,
yeah, I will say I feel like Preston Stinson, who took over as the chair of the House Appropriations Subcommittee on Health. Uh-huh. I do feel like Representative Stinson, is doing great work and trying to take over that mantle where Marcus left off. And
okay, good.
Yeah, and you know, I he's been someone that, you know, I've been able to work with, have serious conversations with, and I'm very appreciative of his willingness to just do the job and not worry about the politics.
Where's his district?
He's in the Edmond area.
has he toured the Griffin Memorial Campus?
I don't know. It's a great question. I should bring him on down.
Probably should.
Yep. I'll do it on a day where the grass is extra high.
And then just go across the street to, what is it? Food and Shelter for Friends.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, my God. Well, it's getting late, you guys. Always good to see both of you. Jared, thank you. Excuse me, Representative Deck. I yeah. need to win, so it's like I gotta slip back into like treating you respectfully. But thank you so much for spending your time. I really appreciate you broadcasting this. I saw it and I texted Arnold and was like, we've got to do an episode on this. And so appreciate it because it went by press release, you know, fly by night press release basically. So
oh yeah, Friday afternoon.
Yep, where news goes to die. So what else would you expect? And we're only out of state providers who are waiting for the jump to, you know, we'll know to seize on it. So anyways, this is great.
Thank you for listening to this episode of ObserverCast. If you like what you hear, please tell your friends about us and share our episodes far and wide on social media. If you're interested in sponsoring ObserverCast, please give Arnold Hamilton a call at 405-478-8700 or drop him an email at ahamilton@okobserver.org. You can also support ObserverCast with a tax-deductible donation to the Oklahoma Observer Democracy Foundation, whose mission is to help create a better, more informed Oklahoma. And to help keep us on the air, visit okobserver.org and click on the Donate button on the upper right side of the homepage. We also urge you to subscribe to the Oklahoma Observer, now in its 55th year of comforting the afflicted and afflicting the comforted. We have a special digital subscription rate for ObserverCast listeners, only $1.99 a month for the first year. That's 50% off the usual rate for monthly digital subscribers. Just use the coupon code ObserverCast when checking out to get the discount rate. And finally, we want to thank Jared Deck for the music you're listening to in the background here. He's not just the resident of Norman anymore. He is now the Oklahoma State Representative for House District 44. Congratulations, Representative Deck. We're so proud of you. But you can still download his albums at iTunes and learn more, including dates for any upcoming performances at jareddeckmusic.com.